Hi everyone, welcome back to the TEFL Training Institute podcast. I'm Ross Thorburn, and this week's episode, we are looking at making materials relevant and writing relevant materials in the first place. And to help us with that, we have Kerry Jones. Kerry is a teacher trainer, and materials writer. She's written several course book series herself. She's based in Spain, and as well as being one of the founders of ELT Footprint, she's also sometimes co-host on the TEFL Commute podcast. In this episode, then, I asked Kerry about materials, the benefits of having relevant materials, why sometimes materials aren't as relevant as they could be, and how, as teachers, we can help to make them more relevant to our students. Enjoy the episode. Hi, Kerry. Thanks for joining us. To start off, I wanted to ask you, what is the benefit of having good and relevant materials for your students? A few years ago, I had some investors for our school coming to speak to me and some other people, and I was in charge of the curriculum and content team at the time. And the investor said to me, why are materials important? I mean, who cares about materials? It's all about teacher training and teacher recruitment, finding and keeping the best teachers. No one really cares about materials. So I just wanted to ask you, what would your take on that be?
The benefit of having good materials is that it should make it easier for the teacher to be able to concentrate on the actual nitty-gritty of teaching, which is paying attention to their students' needs, being able to listen and monitor and react to the emergent needs, language, problems in the classroom. So if the material that you're choosing is appropriate for your context, relevant for your students, and hopefully has been thought through quite thoroughly and systematically as it was written, you should be able to trust it to do the nuts and bolts. And then that allows the teacher the time to do the real quality teaching, as it were. But also, the teacher has to be able to filter that material and make principled and informed decisions about what they will and won't use, how to adapt to certain activities, because any material which has been created is static. It is not going to be 100% fit for purpose. You are going to need to adapt it in some way or other. Materials are not king. Teacher is the king. The materials are there to serve. But good materials should really make life easier for a teacher.
Yeah, I like that. It's like the Alan Cunningsworth quote, course books make good servants but poor masters.
Absolutely, yeah.
So you had an interesting conversation a while back on the TEFL Commute podcast about this issue with some of the vocabulary that gets presented in course books. You guys were talking about houses and how so often a house is like one or two stories. It's got a front garden and a back garden and a driveway and a garage. But that depiction of a house in a course book doesn't really look like the houses that a lot of students live in. And certainly where I live, and for the students I've taught, it doesn't really resemble their realities at all. So why does that happen? Why is it so often that the topics and course books don't really seem to be that relevant to students? And how are those topics decided on?
So I think the classic equivalent is the polar bear image for the environment in course books. It's been so overused now that it's just like this little cliche and it doesn't impact anymore. If you feel strongly about it, it'll actually turn you off. If you've been overexposed to it, then you have absolutely no emotional reaction to it, or you might just choose to distance it. It's kind of, it's irrelevant to most people's context. Very few of our students will actually live somewhere where polar bears live. They don't really feel that they can do very much about it. And it's bad news with no silver lining of action that I can take to bring about a change. So it's also this idea of transmission of information, the unit on the environment in the course book, which is much hated. The problem is that there are a lot of factual texts transmitting information which is out of date by definition. Let's say we were writing material now based on a text written yesterday. By the time it goes to print, even if that's only in 2 months' time, it's out of date. the whole idea of transmitting information about the situation is wrong. And I'm going to take an analogy with technology. Maybe 15 years ago, in the course book, you'd have the technology unit. And the technology unit would be coupled with future verbs. So there'd be all of these, oh, what's going to happen in the future, predictions. So slowly it moved to the present simple and habits. So that makes it easier. But it doesn't, because you've got to future-proof your materials. So what was present habits when the material was written suddenly becomes massively outdated. So then it became relegated to the simple past unit. Let's look at technology retrospectively. Not much interest there for students either. So what has happened with technology? It's become totally normalized in a positive sense. It's completely integrated in everything. So whatever topic we're talking about, we're also talking about technology. Clothes, you're shopping online. Food, there are all these kind of new foods constantly being invented. So the same thing, I think, is going to happen with the environment. It's something that pervades everything. Every single topic has an environmental twist. So rather than having units about the environment, what will happen is when you have discussion questions about any topic, there'll be an environmental take on it.
Yeah, I used to work in a school where we were using content from 15 years ago. And I remember seeing a class with a teacher trying to teach his six-year-old how to say phone and camera. And they had a sort of a picture of a landline phone and a, you know, an old school camera. And I really believe the student had no idea what those things were. And it just seemed absolutely absurd teaching this child who spoke, I mean, virtually no English at all, and focusing on words that, or concepts even, that just were no longer useful or applicable. Yeah. So I guess that's the absurdity of using something that's out of date. So one of the other challenges with making materials relevant seems to be parsnips, those banned topics that usually can't be included in course books to avoid embarrassing or offending different target audiences. So how, as a materials writer, do you attempt to still include meaningful topics but without getting on the wrong side of the censors?
Well, first of all, it's frustrating for almost everybody involved, including the teachers in the countries which are most affected. Those taboos, some of them are cultural sensitivity, but others are just top down. And what will happen is if a book has got the wrong photo or topic, it won't make it past customs. You won't even make it into the country. So that's why the parsnip lists exist, because there is a checklist. And as there is a checklist, which means that the material won't be able to enter a country, then we have to work with that. I think it's really interesting, actually, and I'm wondering how long it'll be before the environment is included on the list of parsnips. Just thinking of the US, for example, they did legislate against using the term climate change in public papers in some states. Climate denial is a reality and it could affect materials writing, but luckily at the moment it doesn't.
With all of those issues then of materials that might not have what teachers and students want or need, how can teachers go about trying to make sure that their course books become more relevant for their students?
I think localizing materials is the most sensible thing to do. So not producing one size fits all materials. If a country has particular cultural sensibilities, they should be asking for materials to be written for their context. And likewise, there are contexts which might have curricular requirements to cover some of the topics that are considered parsnips. And so the course books are selling them short. So they have to supplement the course book because the course book isn't including the topics that they need to cover in class. But I think what we do well is to take a kind of a narrative approach, using stories as the interest hooks, looking at it from a community or an individual point of view rather than looking at global issues. There will be something the students can relate to, and ambiguous or open enough for the teacher or the students, in fact, to be able to bring in their own interpretations. Have a look at this and now compare it to your context, or have a look at this and think about these three different kinds of people. How would they react to this situation? I think it's to do with writing the right questions, which take the students and the teachers down pathways that they can then choose where they're going with them. It's not discuss these three questions. It's look at this list of questions, choose the three which are most appropriate to your context, or which questions are most boring. Well, don't answer those. We're going to give students choices. When we write materials for young adults or for adults, in fact, we have to be able to appeal to students who aren't working yet and students who are in the workplace already. So we write discussion questions which take that into consideration. We need to give you the choice. You can talk about your studies or you can talk about your job. So in the same way, it would be, well, what impact would this have on your local environment? Or how does this impact carbon levels? Or revamping the transport system within their city? That has obvious environmental consequences or considerations. So we need to allow students to, and teachers, choices about what they want to discuss or find out more about.
Yeah. I sometimes found, though, that as a teacher, your hands are a little bit tied. So, for example, many years ago, I remember teaching a whole unit on household tools to eight-year-olds. So there were hammers, nails, screwdrivers, etc. And there just seemed to be very little to do to sort of actually be able to make that relevant for the students. And I think that often seems to be the case, that we include language in course books that doesn't really relate to students. So, for example, maybe food that students have never seen or never eaten before. Yeah, so why does that happen?
So I think there's loads of stuff in there, isn't there? First of all, there's that elementary students have to learn these lists of vocabulary. That, as you say, when exactly are they going to need to use those in a conversation with someone who doesn't speak their L1? Then we come back to the what vocabulary is on the page. And it seems to me that the tail that's wagging the dog there is the vocabulary lists from exam boards. You know, sort of, okay, well, this is the vocabulary that students have used in exams at this level. This is the vocabulary that is used in the questions, in the tasks at this level. So we go back to that, okay, well, if I'm preparing students for an exam, then they need to know all of this. So I think a lot of course book material takes that as the starting point. What's the core vocabulary that they will need in order to be able to cope with the exam? I was reading a blog post today, an interesting blog post by a lexicographer called Julie Moore, who was looking at collocations to do with viewing. So it was, she was saying, like, okay, we teach watch TV as a very early collocation. But does anybody talk about watching TV anymore? Do people actually watch TV? We watch Netflix, we watch TV series, we watch films, but do we actually say we watch TV? So there was this problem of, okay, so at elementary we teach students, you listen to music, you watch TV, but should we say you watch a program, you watch a show, you watch a series, you watch, and then suddenly the vocabulary load that we're asking the students to deal with has become much bigger, but it's more realistic. So what do we do? Do we stick with watch TV as this kind of code for A1 speakers and then expand it later? Or do we just see what our students want to talk about and give them the language for what it is that they do watch? I think the same thing comes up with jobs. So A1 jobs. Nobody in the class does any of the jobs that are on the page. Or know anybody who's a butcher, for example. They want to say things like, I work in IT, or I work for a bank. They don't want to say, I'm a banker. They want to say, I work in a bank. A lot of course books, I think, at A1 still aren't teaching those chunks. Some are, but a lot aren't. So again, it's that thing of, well, okay, these are the, now let's write a sentence for everybody in the classroom. Let's learn the sentence for everybody in the classroom so that we then have opened and extended our vocabulary to the things which are real in our context. That's up to the teacher, though, unless it's in the materials. If you write it as a task in the materials, then you're helping the teacher as well to expand in that way.
Once again, everyone, that was Kerry Jones. If you enjoyed that and you'd like to find out more from Kerry, check out eltfootprint.org. If you'd like to find more podcasts from us, please go to www.tefltraininginstitute.com. And if you enjoy the podcast, please, please, please give us a good rating on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you again next time. Goodbye.